On this week's Kenai Conversation, we welcome Mayor John Williams and former Councilman Dwayne Bannock to the microphones to analyze Tuesday's primary election. This program will be rebroadcast on Saturday at 5 p.m., so please don't phone in then. Due to technical difficulties, we join the program in progress with Williams discussing the changing demographics of the central Kenai Peninsula.
I think we see when you consolidate our major industries, you lose a lot of jobs. So there are people there that are gone. I personally have 4 children and 8 grandchildren that were all born and raised right here in Kenai. Only one of them lives here today. The rest are scattered to the wind. And I think that's indicative of a lot of our young people, so we don't see them coming into the parade. And also older folks that are retired now and tend to travel quite a bit. This is the beginning of their travel season. They may have departed before they voted. So we don't know. I was extremely surprised at the turnout in favor of the newcomer, Mr. Sullivan, over Mr. Machicki. That one was one, I think, that took us all by surprise. I've never seen, or heard of, or been introduced to Mr. Sullivan and have no idea who he is.
Gillum. Yeah, Ron
Excuse
Gillum.
Me. That's how much I remember it.
Right.
The other thing, the change in demographics and just ordinary people that live here. It used to be that I knew everybody in town. I'd walk into the post office and say good morning to dozens of people. Today, I walk into the post office, I'm lucky if I know one person. So things have really changed here on the peninsula. And as I say, I believe we're slipping into a new norm.
Dwayne?
Well, certainly. Number one, thanks to Jay and KDLL for this wonderful opportunity to join Kenai Conversation today.
Oh, you bet. I'm thrilled to have you here.
It's good, clean fun right here. I was a Facebook warrior last night and shocked was my words, echoing the Mayor Williams on particularly the Gillum race, as well as the Wayne Ogle race and Ben Carpenter. I don't know anything about either of the Mr. Carpenter. I don't know anything bad about him. I don't know anybody that knows him, yet he's within 3 votes of a president of the borough assembly and a seemingly popular person in the Nikiski area. Peter Machicki, very good friend of mine. Same thing, who's Ron Gillum? I guess I might take just a slightly different tact than the mayor on what the results were. Trying to just look through my own experiences and history, I think there were 2 major factors in this race. The first major factor, permanent fund dividend check, which 20 years ago may or may not have been the third rail of Alaska politics, but it clearly is, and Senate Bill 91. Senate Bill 91, perhaps as misunderstood as the Senate Bill 21 a few years ago, but it became a rally, and we saw every major gubernatorial candidate campaigning against it. And to the best of my knowledge, I was pouring through the statewide reports last night. Former City of Kenai Police Chief Chuck Kopp, now Representative Chuck Kopp, one of the staunch supporters of Senate Bill 91, he won in a runaway from his district. So for some reason, in I think it's Bayshore, Anchorage, they bought what he was saying about Senate Bill 91. But in other areas of the state, Senate Bill 91 became a kiss of death. That's what I looked at. So if you ran on a campaign of, I'm going to return your dividend to you, and Senate Bill 91 is bad, it seems that was the rallying cry.
Mm-hmm. And quickly for our listeners, could you update them on what SB 91 was?
Sure. I'm sorry. Senate Bill 91, the omnibus crime bill. I am no fan of the representative from Homer. I don't care for him personally, politically, or nothing. But he said something I thought was so spot on. When Senate Bill 91 was passed, it was an omnibus overall comprehensive, whatever word you want to use, crime bill. It was too darn big. And instead of taking bites at the apple, but people like me, we like words like comprehensive and overhaul the whole thing. And the fact of the matter is, the 60 people in Juneau, they didn't get it right. They clearly didn't get it right, and maybe they should have taken it in smaller pieces.
Yeah, I thought when that passed that it was ambitious,
yeah,
let's say.
Well, you know, I take a look at this whole thing, and again, I refer back to my comment of this being the new norm. What has brought all of this about? There's two or three major issues here. One, of course, is the economy. When the economy goes down, people begin to hurt. They begin to hurt financially. They begin to hurt philosophically. So that brings us back to the dividend check. Mm. They need every dime they can get, and many of them will depend on that dividend check. It's appropriate that the dividend check hits here right about the time you pay your property tax. How to save my home if I didn't have the dividend check to do it? That could be answered. The other is this whole crime issue. Crime goes with exactly that. Lack of economy, lack of jobs, so forth and so on. My one daughter lives in Anchorage. They've been hit. She had a brand new SUV stolen and totaled. My other daughter lives in Anchorage, and they had a brand new pickup, not a brand new pickup, one of their work pickups stolen right out of the workyard. You know, I mean, this is two people I know personally, both have had vehicles stolen. Right here on the peninsula, a lot of people who live here have suffered under the issue of crime due to nonviolent crime, the going in and robbing and stealing and so forth. And what brings that about? Well, one major thing, of course, the downturn in the economy. The other is drugs. Both of them are related to the issue of crime. So it's no wonder that people are so interested in that. So again, I say that leads into what I call the new norm. Will we see a change in this? I think not for a while. I think that our issue of the economy is not at the bottom yet. I think it's going to get a little worse before it gets a little better. We're not benefiting from the big growth of the economy in the lower 48. Alaska never does benefit in that manner. It's always a reverse. When they're good, we're bad. When we're good, they're bad.
Right.
So there's my feelings.
You know, I attended a joint chamber lunch, and I believe it was with Senator Michiki, and I think Ron Gillum was... No, he was not there. I think it was an update because Representative Knopp was there. So it was an update there, and it was at the Salt Lake Chamber. Senator Michiki was talking about how he didn't want to overheat the economy, you know, and how they needed to watch out to be careful with the permanent fund so as not to attract too many lazy people to Alaska, because it's getting so big, you can move to Alaska and, you know, get your trailer full of kids and get rich, which ironically is something that I warned about 20 years ago in a sort of tongue-in-cheek op-ed I wrote for, well, not an op-ed, an editorial I wrote for a newspaper I worked for 20-some years ago. I didn't think it would ever come true or that a real senator would say the exact same thing. But these are things that he was saying. He said the economy is turning around in Alaska. We didn't want to do anything that would overheat the economy. You know, I'm looking around at poor people. I'm wondering what that means.
Well, let me say that I don't believe the economy is turning around. The demographics or statistics from last year, if I'm correct, indicate that Anchorage lost only 700 jobs this last year. They actually lost 2,700 jobs, but they gained 2,000 jobs in the so-called service district, waitresses, cooks, people working in the department stores at minimum wage, so forth and so on. So they gained 2,000 in that sector, but lost 700 overall. So really, the economy is not improving that much. So I think the other issue that you bring up about somebody moving up here with a lot of kids might be on a temporary basis. This happened to us over in our neighborhood. A gentleman moved in with seven children, okay? He stayed. He stayed 1 year. He was gone. Why? Because the seven dividend checks weren't enough to carry the family all year long. He couldn't get a job. That was what caused him to leave.
I've seen from an economy point of view in my retail job a definite increase this year over last. We're projecting, particularly at I'm going to put out a plug for the Uptown Motel. The Uptown Motel has seen an incredible increase from last year. We had started a plan about 3 years ago that looked like it would bottom out the winter of 17-18. And I will tell you, the winter of 17-18 was brutal. But I'm happy because every month, every measurement that I've done since then compared to last year, our trend is up. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't have struggles and there's other things that we're concerned about. But I think that we have, I think that the worst is behind us. The best is still in front of us. Whatever that best is, I like to talk about things that are good. I like to talk about the potential reopening of a urea plant. Even though, and I love the fact, let me just say this, I love the fact that Marathon is back in our neighborhood. I was the guy that when all the majors were leaving Cook Inlet, and everyone said, no, no, it's a natural thing, that's what happens, and then the smaller producers come in, and that's all good. I'm okay with being criticized for being a big business kind of guy. I like big oil. And with the return of Marathon back by buying out the Andeavor, also known formerly as Tesoro, I think that is nothing but good news for us when somebody at the corporate level of Marathon says, Kenai Soldotna and the Kenai Peninsula, let's go invest there. That excites me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree. I like to see the big guys moving around in here. The other side of that that offsets that is the consolidation of the entire Cook Inlet. We're down to one major operator and two, three smaller, lesser operators. What happens when one major operator takes over the entire operation is consolidation becomes natural. You now have one man that can do jobs on six or eight different platforms, sure, whereas before you had three or four guys doing those six or eight platforms. So consolidation is good for him or who runs that company, but consolidation is not good for the overall employment picture. With regards to the increase in the business through the private sector, I think some of that come about because we did have a fairly good tourist season this year, and I think that we have bottomed out as far as tourism is concerned, but there are a couple of other industries that are doing quite well here. One of them, of course, is federal money into the road construction business. My goodness, we got a lot of that going on all over the peninsula. The other is healthcare. Healthcare has improved tremendously. The numbers of people, when you drive into the new hospital parking lot, and it is packed, they're not all patients. There's most of them are employees. The hospital has a huge manpower situation there, and that's a big part of it.
But not to overlook, not only is, I agree with you 100% on healthcare, but also keep in mind, small disclaimer, part of my job, there is new healthcare in Kenai that wasn't there 5 years ago. We took an old derelict 45-year-old building and turned it into a premier surgical center and new medical facilities in Kenai that simply weren't here. We haven't lost any doctors, but we've gained more doctors. There's a couple new chiropractic clinics in town. We have more dentists probably than ever before. Even at the hospital, the cancer center and the upcoming heart center, the spine surgeon that has just done so many wonderful things. If we just look back just a little bit, every aspect of healthcare is growing, and those are great jobs too. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely, they're great jobs. Additionally, when you mention the new facilities that are coming in, I've just recently been involved in conversations with a gentleman that's going to be built or plans to build an 18,000 square foot clinic right at the corner of Beaver Loop and the Spur Highway. He's begun excavation there, and it'll be a premier chiropractic and massage therapy facility that he's bringing in there. With specialists. So we're looking at a well-rounded medical facility that we don't have now. Additionally, and another one we don't want to overlook is the Kenaitse Medical Center. The Kenaitse Medical Center has raised their budget, as I understand it, to $30 million a year. That's double what they anticipated in the beginning. And there's a reason for that. They are attracting more people, more customer, I don't want to call medical people customers, but more involvement from people outside of our community that are moving here because of that medical facility. So that's another addition. So medical facility today probably employs more people than the oil industry did in the early day out here when we had them going on the platforms.
No kidding.
Yeah. Also, we did have a big spurt out in the inlet with the $40 million pipeline addition that Hillcorp added to the system. That put a lot of people to work, brought a lot of money in. So between that and the highway construction, that was our big boom for the year in construction.
Mm-hmm. Two very quick things. One, you probably heard or may have heard their is it Rig Tenders Dock? That's for sale. I don't know if that's part of this whole package up there, but I'm hoping to look into that. And also, Duane, what's this other role you have to bring in, renovate buildings and put medical clinics in them?
My real job, oddly enough, is running a fairly good-sized commercial rental property company. And so what the property that I'm speaking of would affectionately be referred to as the old Decor building in Kenai, across from the courthouse.
Right.
That, you know, for years was, a long time ago, it was the furniture store. And then it kind of just fell into kind of disrepair. And today it's completely full with four different medical practices, including a standalone surgery center. That is, I believe, the first for the Kenai Peninsula outside of the hospital.
Wow.
Well, let's get away from the economy for a minute, and let's get back to the election. That's where the excitement is.
Yes, shall we? Do you have something you want to point out specifically, or should we go through some numbers? You know what I want to throw out? I looked up the requirements for a recount, and it is if there is an automatic recount by the state, paid for by the state, is triggered if the candidates are within 20 votes of each other or one half of one percentage point.
And we have a couple of races, I believe, that fall in that category.
Well, yeah, let's see. Mr. Gillum has 50.12% of the vote, and Senator Michiki has 49.88%. And I'm not a math expert, but...
sounds pretty close to the one-half percent. How about the one out north with Mr. Ogle?
31, isn't it? District 31? Let me see. Oh, it's probably 30, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, I go along with my partner, Duane, over here. That one really surprises me because Mr. Ogle has the name recognition. He is the president of the assembly. He has done what I consider to be a relatively good job for his Nikiski constituents. Here's a man who is moderate in his thinking, moderate to the conservative side. Let me restate that. But he's got a good thinking head on his shoulder, and he's got good background and good experience. He's a military officer, retired. I believe he's a former city manager from out around Bethel someplace, isn't he?
I thought it was a public works director.
Public works director.
That's
yeah.
what brought him to Kenai, I
right.
understand.
Yeah. Oh. And so here's a man who is well-educated, well-experienced in political affairs, served his country well in the military, good reputation. And comes a man, Mr. Carpenter, I believe his name is, whom I'd never heard of and don't know anything about. And he's within not only striking distance,
three
he's
votes.
Within 3 votes. What is that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. I couldn't get them on the air. Mr. Ogle wouldn't come on if I brought in the candidate from the open primary. He said that had nothing to do, and so we couldn't really come to an agreement. But I don't think not being on public radio cost him any votes, cost anybody any votes. Let's see. Oh, I should give the phone number in case people out there would like to interact with us. It's 283-8414, and it works. I tested it this week. And so if you'd like to join the conversation, the Kenai conversation, I've got John Williams and Duane Bannock. And we are talking about yesterday's primary election, Alaska primary election, and how it affects what we got going on here in Kenai and how it may affect our economy, our lifestyle, price of rice in China. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. Paul Seaton, probably not Duane's best friend. I think that's who he was referring to earlier.
Representative Hatt.
Got 1,319 votes in the open primary. He will face Sarah Vance, who kind of came out of the blue, but she won pretty handily over John. Well, no, she won by 30 votes over John Cox and pretty handily over the third guy, Henry Kroll. She got 1,033 votes in District 31, which mm-hmm. starts down here at Gaswell Road.
I had the opportunity of meeting Sarah just the other day down at the fair. Very pleasant young lady. she seems to have a path that she's going to follow or wants to follow that's on the right to conservative side of the book. And I'm not all that conservative. I'm a moderate to conservative, I sometimes say, except you've got to cross back over that double white line quite often. But I think she'll be a good candidate. It'll be a good race. With Paul, I'm on the other side of Dwayne when it comes to friendship. I like Paul. I've known him a long time. I am somewhat taken aback by the fact that he did jump from was caused to jump from the Republican Party into the independent status. I think, again, it's a sign of the times. A lot of people are fed up with the status quo. They're fed up with party politics. That's why we saw the number of independents coming in today. I'm no longer registered as a Democrat. Most of you may know that. Some time back, I registered as a non-declared because all of a sudden I wanted to take a look at the candidate and see what they really stood for. I don't care what they're saying now. I want to see what they've done in the past. I want to kind of look ahead and see what they're trying to do in the future. Maybe some more independents out there have got some pretty good ideas. Let's wait and see.
The Republican Party's in trouble. Republicanism is not in trouble. The Alaska Republican Party is in trouble. And if Tuckerman Babcock, my friend, is listening, you need help. Let me just say that again. The Alaska Republican Party needs help. There is a reason that I am not a member of the Grand Old Party. I am as far right as you can possibly get. Mayor John Williams, my good friend, is sitting to my left, and I am sitting to his right.
A good analogy.
As it should be.
I posted a picture on Facebook yesterday of what tie I should wear. There was a blue tie, a red tie, a blue and red tie, and a blue and gold tie. Guess which tie I wore? The blue and gold tie, right. Because it was about Alaska. It wasn't about parties. And what's happening, I thought about this in the wee hours of this morning. Professionally, I'm a car guy. I'm a car salesman. And I grew up in a Chrysler franchise. If you want to be a Chrysler dealer, you have to follow the rules that Chrysler sets for you. And then they award you the franchise. So I could not open up a car lot and say, I'm a Chrysler dealer, and not follow the rules that Chrysler set out. It is a private brand. They get to make the rules. They get to determine who their dealers are and who their dealers are not. The Republican Party, I go back to, I believe it was 1988, President George H.W. Bush coined what was the beginning of the end of the Republican Party. Big tent Republicans. We've got room for everybody. No, you don't. No, you don't. You have to stand for something. And what we've seen in the Alaska Republican Party, you want to be fund the government with the proceeds of the earnings reserve? Yes or no? Do you want to be support Medicaid expansion? Yes or no? And there are so many divisive issues, including the issue of abortion, that the Republican Party has said, hey, we got room for you. We've got room for you. To the credit, the Democrats have been very, very successful in not only narrowing their focus, they have also been successful in recruiting so-called independents. Now, Mayor Williams is an N, so he said. So am I. When we look at the majority of the people that run with the so-called independent or specifically undeclared or nonpartisan, it's only because they're smart enough to know that with the D behind their name, they have no chance of being elected. Thus, the Alaska Democratic Party, to its credit, said, we've got to find a better way to win elections. Tuckerman Babcock, take a note from the blue team and narrow what it means to actually be a Republican. And then you'll start winning elections again.
You know, I asked that very question to retired Air Force Colonel, Army Colonel, Sean Butler. When she was in here, I said, are you running as an undeclared in the open primary just because a D after your name would be the kiss of death? And she said no, you know, because I mean, she's an NRA member. She, you know, I mean, she shoots guns and stuff. I don't know. But I agree with you for the most part, Dwayne, on that. You said something about show your colors or something. why are all the Republican signs anymore blue?
That's a good question. I don't know.
It just happened this year. Why is that? That's completely, that's thrown me off. And it made me think the opposite of what you were thinking about the independents and nonpartisans. I'm thinking, these Republicans have blue signs so that they're fogging the lines.
Maybe.
For,
exactly right. They're confusing the issue.
Because nobody has a sign that says, I'm a Republican, vote for me, or I'm a Democrat, vote for me. I'm a card-carrying communist, vote for me. Nobody has their affiliation on a sign, and we've become so used to seeing the color and thinking, and, oh, yeah, that guy, yeah.
Let me read you a Facebook comment that just came in on that point from my good friend Robbie.
Okay.
More Alaskans are registered undeclared or nonpartisan than on the two-party system. That's exactly right. 53% of the registered voters could care less about party politics, and that's where we need a real revolution in Alaska. I coined a phrase a long time ago. It's mine. It's all mine. I should trademark it. We need a separation of party and state. Mm-hmm. The state of Alaska has no vested interest in Tuckerman Babcock and the Alaska Republican Party any more than they do. Forgive me. I don't know who's in charge of the Alaska Democrats.
That's a pretty funny statement.
But it's true, though. Is it not true?
No, I don't think there's anybody in charge of the Alaska Democratic Party.
Oh, I don't know. Somebody's got to be the executive director. Wasn't it your daughter, Debbie Williams?
Oh, no.
Different Deborah Williams.
Debbie doesn't get that involved in politics. Now, if you'd have said Donna, I might have said yes. However, she cannot get involved
in politics. There was a Debbie Williams.
Deborah Williams was it, but it wasn't my Debbie.
That wasn't your Deborah Williams.
I didn't mean to sidetrack you, Dwayne. No. It's just I just had to make a joke about there being nobody in charge of the Democrats.
Let's go back just a minute to the issue of the party split and the non-declareds, and then we're going to move into the gubernatorial race. And I'll start with this by saying my friend Dwayne and I agreed on who to vote for yesterday for governor. Both of us voted for Meade Treadwell. And I voted for Meade because he was a well-known, well-experienced, lots of background, and he's done some great things for this state. Okay, that's why I voted for Meade. I could not vote for Dunleavy based on his track record at the legislature and just the way he presents himself. So, you know, there we were, two independents voting on the Republican ticket for the man we thought was best. Now we have to make a real choice. Dwayne's going to make his choice. I'm going to make my choice. And I think we both know where we're going to wind up with on that one. So, again, going back to the whole issue of party. You know, the independents of this state have the controlling vote. The non-declareds, they're sick and tired of this whole issue of, you know, bickering back and forth between the parties. The issue about the sign, the parties themselves, the candidate themselves are tired of it. In the early days of my politics up here, which go back 50 years, our signs said Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican. All the signs had it on there. Are they ashamed to do that today? Are the candidates themselves wanting to divorce themselves from the ensconced party, you know, looking more for that independent vote?
I don't disagree with that at all. I think that I believe in party purity, which is why I simply cannot join the Alaska Republican Party, because they're not my good friend Neil is a bigwig in the Republican Party. I said, name me three things that every Republican in Alaska agrees on. Couldn't. And this was a couple of years ago in the Senate race. And he said, the one thing we can all agree on is beat Mark Begich. Now, what I don't know is if the Republicans still have that today. That might be the one thing. Beat Mark Begich, beat Bill Walker. That might be the only thing. But when it comes to a policy, and just going back to your comments regarding Ms. Butler, many years ago, I used to host a radio show. And one of the first so-called independents that I interviewed, a gentleman by the name of Ron Devon, he was running for the Alaska State Senate. And his big campaign theme was gas prices. That was his campaign. And I said to Mr. Devon on the air, I asked him, I said, what separates you from the Alaska Democratic Party? Well, I'm blah, 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 he gave me a thing. And I said, no, let's get specific to the platform. What specifically do you disagree with? And he answered, I don't know. Well, because I'm sometimes a trick bag kind of guy. I said, well, lucky me, I happen to have their platform in front of me. And I read off point by point by point by point. And the fact of the matter is, Ron Devon aligned himself 100% with the Democratic Party, yet wise enough to know that in South Anchorage and Nikiski, as the district was defined then, he had no chance of being elected. That's what my conspiracy friends call a false flag candidate.
I think it was John Devens. Is this the gentleman from Valdez?
No. South Anchorage, married to Jeannie Devon.
The
Mud Flats.
Right. Okay. Yeah, not the gubernatorial candidate.
No. Okay.
He was a Senate candidate when we had the South Anchorage Nikiski.
Yeah,
right.
I think Jerry Ward finally wound up at that seat.
So going back now to the gubernatorial race, we've got a real horse race on our hands here. This reminds me so much, Duane, of the 1990 election. Throw it in the air. You know, three candidates out there running wild. Where are we going to wind up coming down on this one? That one was really a crazy one. Wally Hickel jumped into the race with Jack Coghill at the last minute. Just gave Arla Sturgiluski an absolute fit. She had to run around and find herself a candidate really quick, who wound up being Mr. Campbell.
Right.
And there was Tony Knowles, well-known, well-respected former governor, running right in the middle of everything and couldn't make the grade. See, Wally took over that year, as you recall. Is this going to be another year like that, where we have this wild triple card going?
Yeah, you know, Arla Sturgiluski really got screwed that year.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I love Wally Hickel. I mean, he's a nice guy. I actually spent 3 days with him and Irma Lee flying throughout Southwest Alaska when I was the editor of the Tundra Drums, and got to spend 3 whole days with him.
Mm-hmm. And, why did she get screwed?
Well, just the fact that Hickel jumped in at the last minute and stole her running mate.
Okay, but go back to my point about party purity. What was the issue that got her in trouble with the Alaska Republican Party?
Oh, you know, I actually lived out of state in 1990, so I don't
abortion.
Really know.
It was abortion.
Oh.
And she was a pro-choice candidate and not afraid of it. And that Jack Coghill, who had won the lieutenant governor's race, Jack Coghill couldn't handle that. So Jack Coghill, as the story goes, recruited Wally Hickel to run. They formed they took over the AIP ticket, the Rent-A-Party. That's where I coined the phrase, the Rent-A-Party. They kicked off Jerry Ward and somebody else.
Bill Vogler, I think, was still in the
job. Yeah, and took over the AIP seat so they wouldn't have to do a write-in campaign.
Oh, yeah.
But the facts of the matter are, Arla Sturgiluski, Lisa Murkowski, and many other very high, well-established, well-respected Republicans don't jive with the Republican Party platform.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? If I'm Tuckerman Babcock, I say, get rid of the pro-life, pro-choice question off your platform. Just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Because it's too much of a fight. We don't want it. Here's what we want. Name five things that we can all agree on. Then, much like my Chrysler example, check this box, check that box, check that box, check that box. I'm okay with party purity. Some people are not. I am.
Are you worried that that may shrink the size of your party over time?
Don't call it my party. Ain't my party.
whatever party you join that is pure, are you worried or concerned that if you were a part of that party and it became pure, that it would shrink and shrink and shrink?
Let me answer it this way. I was a Boy Scout when only boys could be in the Boy Scout. And I'm okay with boys in the Boy Scout. I am not okay with girls in the Boy Scouts. So does that shrink them? Does that make them a bigoted, sexist organization? Absolutely. They are absolutely a sexist organization, the Boy Scouts. But they're trying not to be, so we're going to have girls in the Boy Scouts now. In Duane's world, there's something pathetically wrong with girls in Boy Scouts.
Are they going to have boys and Girl Scouts?
I don't think so. Not yet.
But now, see, that would be fair. I would be...
Life ain't fair.
You know, going back to good old Wally Hickel, I knew Wally Hickel for 50 years or more.
Can I get the phone number in one more time here? 283-8414. I'm pretty sure it's working. Give us a shout. We'll put you on the air with Duane and John and myself. We've got 20 minutes left, so please, 283-8414. John, go ahead. Wally Hickel.
You know, Wally said to Irma Lee, actually, and this was a quote from him, if we can just get past 5 o'clock, we're safe. He really didn't want to run for governor. But when Jack came over, and I've known Jack for over 50 years, too, from Nenana, when Jack came over and pressured him, he had no choice but to say okay. And he went down there and he did it. He put $800,000 of his own money, bang, right on the table to do that job. Our relationship with Wally Hickel goes all the way back to my very first election. I was running for the state legislature in 1966. This will show you how sometimes your mouth can get you in trouble. So we're out at Clear Air Force Station, and Wally comes out to do some campaigning, and he says, John, when I'm elected governor, and if you're elected to the legislature, do you think we can be able to get along all right? And big me, I said, well, I don't think we're going to have to worry about that, Wally, because I don't think you're going to get elected. See? Well, that was the worst mistake I could have made. 6 months later, I'm now chairman of the Alaska State Pipe Trades Association. I go to Juneau to do our convention. The guys say, John, you're the chairman. Go up see the governor and see if he'll come down and have lunch with us. And I said, oh, guys, I really don't want to do that. They said, no, you're the chairman. Go up there and do it. So I went up to see the governor. How are you, governor? Everybody's in good shape. Oh, I'm great. How are you, John? Sat down. What brings you to my office? Well, the guys would like to have me ask you if you'd come down to dinner with us. Wally looked me right in the eye, and he said, John, he said, you remember that conversation we had about 6 months ago? And I said, yes, governor, and I'm here to eat crow. Well, the bottom line was Wally came to lunch with us, and we all had a great time, and he and I were good friends for 50 years after that, till the man passed away.
Wow. We have a phone call here, but remind me to tell you my favorite Wally Hickel story. Hello, you're on the air.
Well, thank you for the program, and thanks to your guests for showing up. They're both friends of mine and astute observers of the political scene. So I just like to say that I've been growing more and more disappointed in the fact that to be elected, you have to basically bow down at the shrine of the PFD and to say, I'm going to fight for your PFD. Well, I'm prepared to vote for the person who says, you know what, your PFD is not the most important thing here. And if we have to use part of the earnings reserve to fund this government, it's my understanding that that's why the permanent fund was established. And so, again, I just want to say, I agree with what you were saying earlier, but to point out that it's really too bad that people here are so self-absorbed in a couple thousand dollars a year that they will not support a candidate that doesn't vow to protect their PFD. I think Dunleavy, I voted for Treadwell as well. I think Dunleavy is pandering. That's what I think.
Can I ask you a quick? Your voice sounds familiar, and I'm pretty sure I know who you are, and I think you're pretty smart when it comes to money. What about the idea that over the last 3 years, or the last three permanent fund dividend checks, the statutory formula has not been followed? Do you have any grief with that at all?
I do have some grief with it. That's true. I do have some grief. I would prefer that that statutory formula be changed to allow for this POMV approach to the whole thing. If we're going to have a dividend, let's do it with a POMV approach. But that wasn't done. And I agree with you if you're making the point that, hey, we've got a statute on the books, let's follow it. If we don't like the statute, let's change it. I agree.
Well, you know, that brings up a real point here, adhering to the statute. Supposing we put in a POMV, and supposing the law is on the books, it's a statute, and supposing someone comes along again and says, yeah, but the legislature has to appropriate the funding, and I'm going to veto any bill, finance bill that comes through with the legislative approval of full funding. You know, you're going to take it as much as I want you. That's what happened this time. You know, the law is there. The formula is there. The governor says no permanent fund dividend, or I'm going to cut it to 1,000 instead of 1,600.
I think the argument that a lot of people are making, my permanent fund dividend check was stolen, you could argue, that's a successful argument based on the fact, as the caller alluded, that they're not following the law. I have advocated for a redo of the permanent fund dividend formula. I have never advocated it for it being enshrined in the Constitution, which I think is just absolutely crazy. The right to life, the right to liberty, the right to bear arms, the right to free cash. One of those doesn't belong, and I'll leave it up to you to decide which one doesn't belong. But that's what the Constitution is supposed to be. But as crazy as we are in this state, the chances of getting that passed is tragically possible.
Yeah. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good to hear from you, Larry.
You know, I sent out a tweet this morning, and I was speculating as to how fast. Given that to be successful in politics in Alaska today, you basically have to, or you can be successful in politics today by running exclusively on a platform of, I'm going to make sure you get your PFD. And I speculated on exactly how fast Jay Hammond was spinning in his grave.
You know, my father-in-law, he's long since passed, but I remember him standing in front of Fred Braun's gun shop. Now, this goes back when Fred was selling guns and boats and things like that before real estate. And he said, this permanent fund is the worst thing that could ever happen to the people of the state of Alaska. It will come back to haunt you, believe me. And let me tell you, it has, hasn't it?
Well, let's go back to gubernatorial politics for a second. I like Bill Walker. I think he's been an average to below average in a production governor. I would say this to his face. I've said it to him before. Bill Walker is not going to win re-election for one main reason. Cutting the permanent fund dividend check arbitrarily. Now, there's a dozen reasons why I would not want Bill Walker to be governor again. My number one problem with Governor Bill Walker is Byron Mallott. I think Byron Mallott has made a complete disgrace of our elections in Alaska, and Byron Mallott should have resigned a long time ago. So, and the fact that they put this ticket together, they had to. So Bill Walker had to choose, I want to be associated with the guy that has overseen the worst division of elections in the history of Alaska.
Oh, wait, you're going to have to back that up with something.
Okay, sure, no problem. How many times have we had court challenges to determine a race for a candidate for an election?
No idea.
Exactly one time. Oh. Exactly one time. There have been lawsuits regarding the open primary. That the state has lost, so they have defended the wrong. So either the Alaska Supreme Court is wrong, or the Lieutenant Governor's office is wrong. Pick one. It's got to be when the Division of Elections gets sued, and the state Supreme Court rules against them. I believe there's three different cases that have gone to the Alaska Supreme Court in the Walker Mallott administration that the Division of Elections has lost. One was the House District 40. Race last year. One was the open ballot, or the whatever we call the I don't want to be disrespectful, but the whatever the word is that's not the Republican ballot.
Right. Okay. Yeah, sure.
And then there was one other case involving elections that went all the way to the Supreme Court. Okay. If we value elections, why in the world are our elections in front of the Supreme Court?
Well, I think things go to the court so that things get straightened out, and so everybody's on the same playing field, Dwayne. You can't have things in the fog. I mean, if everybody, the courts are there to clear the fog, Dwayne.
Then we have to agree there was more fog in the last 4 years than the prior 50 years of Alaska.
Well, and the biggest fog was this whole issue with the governor deciding which ballot he's going to run on. Now he's out gathering signatures.
Yeah.
First, I'm on this ballot. No, that doesn't look just right. Okay, I can go over here. Who says I can go over here? The Alaska Supreme Court made the decision to allow him to do exactly what he's doing today.
And while I don't always agree with the outcome of the Alaska Supreme Court, I always recognize they have the final authority.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the mom and the dad. At least in our state. Right.
Yeah.
And so, or in a federal issue, the United States Supreme Court. Clearly, there have been decisions from the United States Supreme Court that I don't agree with, but I get it. It's like going to mom and dad, and when the parents say, because I'm the parent, that's why, you can't beat that argument. Worst election oversight in the history of Alaska. Challenge
see,
me.
You should have elected John Williams as the
Lieutenant Governor
a long time ago.
He'd still be there, ladies and gentlemen. I have a Jay Hammond story. It's much shorter than my Wally Hickel story.
All right.
Do you know why Jay Hammond was a Republican?
Why was that?
Because in the district in Dillingham and Lake Clark, there was already a Democrat running, and that was Joe McGill, who won and served several terms in the state house. he had tried, or he wanted to run, or Jay Hammond wanted to run, but he knew he couldn't beat Joe McGill as a Democrat. So he said, well, I'll just run as a Republican.
Well, that's as good a reason as any, I suppose.
Seems to
well,
be
I
today.
Can't beat him. I'll just switch over to the other side. But again,
and he still couldn't beat him.
Doesn't that go back to the whole issue that we're looking at right today, and that's the non-declared? You really don't know who's a Republican and who's a Democrat anymore. You know, I recall very clearly one evening having dinner with Senator Stevens. We were at a nice big party, and Senator Stevens, very close, good friend of mine, he said to me, John, he said, the more I look at you and the more I listen to you, the more you sound like a Republican. I turned and I said, Senator, have you checked your own hole card lately?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, let's take a look at the reality here.
Well, you know, that's true. And I don't think Dwayne's going to agree with me, but I think when Gary Stevens had that coalition in the Senate, they got a lot more done than any Senate since.
They got absolutely nothing accomplished of substance.
They got lots of stuff accomplished. And I will go and research.
What did they
that
get accomplished? They got accomplished to ACES. What's happened to ACES? Gone. They got accomplished AGEA. What happened to AGEA? Gone. They're two, the deal with the devil that was made with the Senate coalition and the Palin administration, without question, the two premier pieces of legislation, Alaska's Clear Equitable Share, gone. The Alaska Gasline Inducement Act, gone. So while there were short-term gains, all that's left is history of those. Now, we could argue whether it was a good idea to do them or to undo them. That would be an argument. It is not an argument to say that what they accomplished is not on the books today.
Well, at least they didn't decide to pay the oil companies to come here and drill oil.
It was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
That was a terrible idea.
Like the Senate we just, we're unelecting right now.
Yeah, I'll bring that up just for a moment. Oh. We have a company called Blue Crest right down the road from us. Blue Crest thought that they were going to go under because they couldn't get the money promised to them to drill. And they had drilled a successful well that was producing minimal amounts, 400 or 500 barrels a day. Somehow or another, they managed to forge ahead and create new alliances and partnerships and finally got some more funding coming into them. The result was they drilled their second well, which is producing magnificently for them, and they're going to be successful. And they're going to be able to do it without that money because the darn money's tied up in the courts now.
Right.
You know, so they may never get the other money. But they forged ahead. They had tenacity. They knew they had a good thing. And I think that Blue Crest is going to be very successful and good for them.
That's terrific. Did you hear about the Donlin Creek gold mine north of Bethel, between Bethel and McGrath? They're interested in buying Cook Inlet gas, natural gas.
Oh, yes. So they're going to run a pipeline. They want to run a pipeline all the way over there, and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It does, you know.
Yeah.
We're very, very short of infrastructure in the state of Alaska when you take a look at the lower 48. If you look at the miles, thousands upon thousands of miles of gas lines in the lower 48, all the way from Texas to New York just to serve their heating needs, we're way, way behind in infrastructure in this country.
Yeah, that's true. I personally like the idea of a road to Nome, but
I like a road to anywhere.
I was at a group out in Dillingham one time. We were over there campaigning, Stephen McAlpine and I. And I brought up the subject of a road out to Dillingham, and everybody jumped up and said, oh, wait a minute. Have you ever thought of that maybe some of us out here don't want a road?
Nope, nobody in Dillingham wants a road.
Nobody
there.
In Dillingham wanted that road. Down to Naknek maybe, but not to Anchorage.
Yeah. Let's see. We got about 10 minutes. I'm going to give the phone number one more time, 283-8414. Give us a shout if you want to get on the air with John Williams or Dwayne Bannock. Dwayne, who is far more prepared than I am today, and I'm going to have to do some research next time I have you on, sir. Of course, that also comes naturally to him.
It's fun
I'll
for
tell
me.
You,
it's fun.
I got to give Dwayne credit. He's probably the best candidate I ever ran against. Because you better sharpen your pencil. You better sharpen your pencil before you debate him, believe me.
I'll tell you a John Williams story.
Okay.
There was a day that he and I were on complete opposite sides of the street, literally and figuratively. And we're out waving signs on that particular day in 2001, and he's getting in a lawn chair. He's in a lawn chair. And he's got a big family, too. And it's about 6 o'clock at night, and I've been out there for 12 hours. And I finally suck it up, and I walk across the street. I shake his hand and say, Mayor Williams, how long are you going to be here? And he goes, I'm waiting for you to leave. I said, if I leave, will you leave? He goes, I'm right behind you.
Oh, man. I got to tell you, I certainly did enjoy, the interactions and the results that came from your guys' interactions over the years.
We've had good fun. We've agreed on way more important things than we've ever disagreed on. You mentioned at the beginning Mead Treadwell. I posted about Mead Treadwell. The way I got to know Mead Treadwell was through the Challenger Learning Center. And Mayor Williams and I were at ground zero of the Challenger Learning Center.
Right
and
on.
Of all of my public accomplishments that I've ever had the opportunity to be involved with, my fingerprints on that project, the top of the list. And that was where I learned about Mead Treadwell, and we became friends. He was Wally Hickel's appointment to the Board of Governors, and did a great job for the Challenger Learning Center in its when it was just an idea. And we were sitting in a boardroom with a chalkboard. And that's literally where Challenger Learning Center started. And I had the privilege of being with John Williams as the city of Kenai took a lead role. And John Williams gets a lot of criticism for big projects. He gets a lot of criticism for that. But he was so spot on with that. And we're a better community today because of the Challenger Learning Center.
That's still going strong?
Well, and we had a good mixed team, too. I'll tell you, we took that away from Anchorage. Anchorage could have had it.
Should have had
later
it.
Came back and tried to stop it. They said, we can still stop this. We can still take it back to Anchorage. But it was too late.
Yeah. You named it after Ted and Catherine Stevens, right?
Right,
that might have helped.
Because Ted funded it, you know. Yeah. We put together a picture portfolio of the project that we went to visit at Jesuit University in Wheeling, West Virginia. And I took the portfolio to Senator Stevens, and I handed it to him, and he thumbed through it. That was funded by Senator Byrd. Byrd was the Democrat, also his nemesis on the Appropriations Committee. They'd swap back and forth, on the appropriations. Senator Stevens looked at that. He handed it to his aide, and he says, you find out how Senator Byrd did this. And when he found out how Senator Byrd had pushed that whole thing through and named it after his wife, Ora Ida, he said, that's it. And Senator Stevens came to the front with nearly $7 million to build it. So.
Wow. We have another phone call. Hello, you're on the air.
It is a privilege to listen to Dwayne and John. I think we've got two experts on Alaska history for sure. And I wanted to know, like a personal question, how do you guys frequently talk together, or do you speak together very much? Because you've got a widespread in age right there.
Thank you.
And yeah, Dwayne's much older than
I didn't mean to. I'm right in the middle. I'm 57 here, so I'm kind of, And the information that has been, sent out here today with this, it's incredible. It was great. It was I am incredibly, but I wanted to see what your relationship is with each other.
Oh, I think it's very, very good. Dwayne and I go all the way back to the city council. I've known Dwayne since he was a student over in the Cook Inlet Academy. I'm nearly 80 years old right now, so, I got a couple of years under my belt. Dwayne and I have been on both sides of topics. We've been against each other and for each other, mostly on party lines in the old days when we were both independents as we are today. We work together on capital projects. I see Dwayne quite often. I go over to the restaurant, have breakfast periodically, and he calls me on the phone. I call him. We kibitz back and forth on the interface, and I'm just glad to have Dwayne as a longtime friend.
John Williams, I remember meeting him as the mayor when I was a Boy Scout. And part of a Boy Scout merit badge included going to a Kenai City Council meeting. I remember the topics of the Kenai City Council meeting that night. It was the new Kenai Airport. And then in my very first run for the Kenai City Council in 1988, I did not win, but I was appointed to the Kenai Planning and Zoning Commission by Mayor Williams in 1988. And I have always respected Mayor Williams. We have not always agreed, but I've always respected him, and he's been a political mentor to me, sometimes teaching me the way not to do it, but still I appreciate our friendship very much. Thank you for the call.
Sometimes those are the best lessons, right?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for the call.
It's been enjoyable. I have appreciated the show.
Thank you for that. It's very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah, good fun right there.
Let's see. We have this is like the most awkward time when you have like 2 minutes left. You're staring at your guests, and you go, "Well, I got to do things in 2 minutes, but you guys can't leave for 2 minutes because I can't. I don't have 3 minutes of stuff to do." So, do you guys have 2 minutes of anything you would like to finish off on? Any last words on the Senate District O race?
So it's close. The vote count
12
is,
votes.
Yeah, it could go with a recount. It could change. There are absentee votes have been counted. Question votes have not been counted. Peter Machicki is a good friend of mine. What I am concerned about, even if he wins this race, which he still can easily win this race, is he wounded by squeaking by when he should? I predicted him at 76%. That's how far off I was. Does that affect him in Juneau next year?
I think when it all comes down to Juneau itself, whoever's there is going to become part of the system, and I don't think that there'll be any pall cast on Machicki if he does win. I'm, as I said before, totally surprised that he was taken out of the play by such a newcomer who, you know, none of us really know much about.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see, 12 votes and 0.24. So 24 one-hundredths of 1%.
Is it down to 12 votes? And Duane, you said that the absentees have been counted?
According to what I saw this morning, absentees are in the precincts. Question ballots are not in the precincts.
Are there any outstanding rural precincts that haven't turned in yet?
All the precincts have reported.
Not in that race. As of this morning, when I printed this off, we had 98.6% statewide in.
But in District O, 100%. Or have returned.
Now there's still there. We still have some statutory days for mail-in ballots to come in that were postmarked by yesterday. Will it make a difference? Rarely. They seem to always trend. And when I looked through the individual precincts, there wasn't any one precinct or another where somebody got blown out of the water. And so why would the question ballots be any different than that?
Right.
The trend. I'm a trend analysis kind of guy, and trends tend to hold.
True. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in. This might have been my favorite hour of radio that I've done since I've been back. I really mean it.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to have to do it again maybe before the general election.
I'd be honored.
It is just about 11 o'clock, and this is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM. Kenai Soldotna.